What we're going to talk about this morning is the Ten Commandments, and I was assigned this as kind of a setup for the lessons that we're going to be dealing with this month. The Ten Commandments, of course, we realize it is the foundation of the laws of Jesus, and the laws that Jesus taught was to put God first, to love God first, and then to love neighbor as self. The Ten Commandments were first given in the 20th chapter of Exodus, and that's where we will get the information that we speak of this morning. There was a historian by the name of Bruce Shelley. He wrote a book, The Gospel and the American Dream. And he made the quote in this book that he wrote, speaking about the Statue of Liberty. It said that in one hand, Lady Liberty holds the torch of freedom, and in the other hand, the tablet of law. The torch challenges the forces of darkness and tyranny. The tablet of law reminds us that liberty that degenerates into license is but yet another form of slavery. And I thought those are very good words. When we read the message of the Ten Commandments, we realize that God has brought a very despised group of people, the Israelites, the Jews, out of bondage that they had been under for many years under the Egyptians. They were slaves. And God brought them out of this slavery and delivered them to a land that he gave them. But he did not want for them to go from one form of slavery into another form of slavery. So he gave them some laws and some rules to live by. Because the tyranny that the Egyptians had imposed upon the Israelites could easily have turned in this promised land that God gave them into a life of self and personal passions, and without rules, and without restrictions, and without guidelines, and without guideposts, they could have put themselves into another form of slavery that was equal to or worse than what the Egyptians had done. So the purpose of the Ten Commandments is a law of deliverance. It is not a law of domination. The Ten Commandments, then, he says in this book, we could refer to as maybe the Statute of Liberty for the Israelites. We must be governed by rules. It's part of life. Rules must be clear, they must be defined, they must not be onerous, and they must be enforced. And if rules are not clear and defined and enforced, then we in fact do live in a chaotic situation. Friday night football is about to begin. I'm looking forward to it. But if I go to the first football game and I see one little group with helmets and pads and I see another group with bats and balls and I see another group in shorts kicking a round ball, when that whistle blows and they all start playing their own sport out on the field, it's chaos because you all have to be in the same game, playing the same game by the same rules. Otherwise, you have chaos. So rules are necessary. Rules must be right. They must be understood. And they must be enforced. And as games are impossible without rules, society is the same way. I do not like traffic lights. And you cannot go from one part of this town with the other without being stopped at probably 90 to 200% of them. And I've stopped at every one of them. But it would be impossible to drive from one spot and get to another spot without chaos and without danger if we did not have these infernal lights that must stop us. They are a necessary part of society. I've been cut on several times by surgeons. I don't want somebody that doesn't know what he's doing to take a strap, a knife to this little short fat body. I want him to be very well taught. I want him to understand. I want him to know the rules, and I want him to be a professional. Rules are important. Enforcement of the rules are important, and that's what keeps us out of the chaos. There are some don'ts in the Ten Commandments. In fact, there are six of them. And there are some do's in the commandments which God has given. And life is filled with do's and it's filled with don'ts. Don't put the scissors in the light socket. Don't pick up that pretty red shining coal that you see. Don't run in a parking lot. These are the don'ts that we tell our children, and we do not tell them that because we want to take away the joys of life. We tell them that because we love them and we want to protect them. And the Ten Commandments are the statutes of liberty that guard not only our interest and promote our well-being, but they also protect us from ourselves. The first four commandments of the Ten Commandments are all pointed Godward, and they have to do with the relationship that man has with God. The last six commandments are all pointed manward, and they have to do with the relationship that we have with others. When Jesus was asked which commandments were the greatest, he said to love the Lord with all our hearts and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And the commandments and these words are all summed up, both Godward and manward, in the Ten Commandments which God gave to Moses. So this is what we're going to do for a while this morning. We're going to discuss the Ten Commandments, and we're going to discuss how they relate to us. And we're going to discuss and realize that the Ten Commandments that God gave to Moses was given as a foundation for the eventual law that Christ would write. Let's go to Heavenly Father in a word of prayer. The first thing I want to express and to make known about the Ten Commandments that God gave is that these commandments belong to those that lived under the Mosaic law. These were laws that God gave to the children, the Jews, the Israelites, as he brought them out of Egypt, where he's taken them to the promised land. They do not apply to us today. The Ten Commandments have zero saving power. So we need to realize just exactly what the Ten Commandments were. They were laws from an ancient covenant. They were laws for the children of Israel. They were laws from 4,000 years ago, and they have nothing to do with us today. The law was given on to Israel. It was not given to the Gentiles. The law was temporary. It was made so that it would guide Israel until the time when Christ would come and would be able to provide a more perfect law, according to Galatians 3. It was a law that fulfilled the mission that God had for Christ. And when Christ died upon the cross of Calvary, according to Colossians 2 and 14, he nailed this old covenant, this old law. He abolished it, he fulfilled it, and he nailed it to the cross. He abolished the law in his flesh, Ephesians 2 and 15, and Hebrews 10 and 9 said the law, the old law, the Ten Commandments have been officially done away with. But nine of the Ten Commandments that God gave to the children of Israel have been brought forth and have been reiterated and have been established as part of the new law. One of the commandments that God gave to Moses was also brought forward, but it was brought forward in an amended way. It was changed. So all ten of the laws that God gave to the children of Moses as he brought them out of Egyptian bondage, all ten of them have been brought forth and brought into the New Testament with one exception, and it was an amendment. So let's go to the book of Exodus and let's see what the Ten Commandments were. Let's see what God had to say to the children. The very first commandment that God gave was in Exodus 20 and 3. And God said, "Thou shalt have no gods, thou shalt have no other gods before me." That meant that God was the only God, and everything else was nothing but a figment of imagination. God said, "You will put nothing and no one ahead of me." This law prohibited other gods, and this law has been brought forward into the New Testament. Commandment number two, thou shalt not make thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. God said, do not make any graven image except me. In Christ, the Godhead. Make no graven images. And he meant it then. It was prohibited then. And this same commandment has been brought forth into the new law. The number three commandment was, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Do not curse or blaspheme or undermine the name of God in any way. It was prohibited for the children of Israel. This also has been brought forth into the New Testament, which would include all portions of the Godhead. Number four, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. That law has also been brought forward from the old law to the new law, but in amended day. The Sabbath day was the day that God rested, and this was the day that he made important to the Jews, that they, since he rested on the Saturday or on the Sabbath day, that the Jews also would rest on the Sabbath day and it would be their holy day. However, when Jesus Christ came down from the throne of heaven and came to earth as a man and lived a life that was perfect and was able to justify and to sanctify this old law, God gave Jesus the ability and the authority to change the day. And Jesus changed the day from the day of rest when God rested to the day of Sunday, which is the first day of the week, which is the day that Jesus sanctified as the day that he arose from the dead. And Jesus then replaced Sunday as the Lord's day in place of the old Sabbath day that God had given. Still a holy day. Still a holy day. Still an important day, but no longer the seventh day of the week, but now according to Jesus and his covenant, the first day of the week, and it is still part of our law. Commandment number 5, honor thy father and thy mother, for the days may be long upon the land which the Lord hath given thee. Honoring the father and mother was taught and was expected under the old law. In fact, there was some very, very severe penalties of death if one did not honor. This law has also been brought forward into the new law. This is the only commandment that God gave that had promises with it. And the promise was, if you honor your father and mother, you may live long upon the earth. So, this was God's law then. It is under the law of Jesus today. Number 6, thou shalt not kill. We've got hundreds of laws in the books now that say the exact same thing and different degrees of punishment and different degrees of guilt for the same thing that God said in 4 words, thou shalt not kill. This also has been brought forward. Murder was prohibited under the old law. It is also prohibited today. The 7th commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. This also has been brought forth, not only to the children of God under the Mosaic law, but also was brought forth into the law that Jesus wrote. And Jesus expanded upon this to even include lust. Very strong law. Very much prohibited by God. Commandment number 8, thou shalt not steal. Prohibited stealing for the children of Israel. And of course, this also has been brought forward into the law of Christ. Number 9, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. False witness is lying. False witness is saying something wrong about someone. False witness would be sitting on a witness stand and telling lies. It takes away from an individual's integrity and their reputation. It was prohibited under the old law. That too has been brought forth in New Testament scripture under the new law. And the last commandment was, thou shalt not covet anything that is thy neighbor's. Whether it's his animals or his home or his money or his wife or anything else, thou shalt not covet anything that is thy neighbor's. This was prohibited under the old law, and this also has been brought forward into the new law, and it is still against the commandments of God. So what do these 10 laws, these rules, teach? They teach, and this is from the beginning when God gave them, that if you love God with all of your heart, then logically, if you love God, logically you will put him first. You will put away your idols. You will not take his name in vain. And you will honor his special day. Man to God. The first 4. It also goes that if you love your neighbor as yourself, it again is only logical that you're not going to steal from him. You're not going to kill him. You're not going to lie to him. You're not going to fornicate with him. You're not going to be covetous of what he has. And you're going to honor him as the commandment says, honor the father and mother. These 6 commandments are man to man. Jesus, in Mark 12, 30 and 31, and I want to read these words that Jesus himself spoke. And they're very important words because they are the foundation upon everything that we know and everything that we do as Christians. Jesus said in Mark 12, verses 30 and 31, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And then he concludes with probably one of the most important verses and sentences in the entire Bible. There is no other commandment greater than these. But that means it's plenty, plenty serious. When Jesus said the first commandment is to love God, and the second commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself, and then he concludes all of it by saying there are no greater commandments than these. That means we better be listening and we better be paying attention. And although this is something that we may see is extremely difficult, possibly impossible, it's something we had better be looking at. The greatest commandment from Jesus is very neatly cataloged in the Ten Commandments that God gave to the ancient Israelites. It is, in fact, the foundation upon which the new covenant was built. Why do we preach on the Ten Commandments? Well, the main reason that we preach on the Ten Commandments is because they were the foundation upon which the new law was written. So we preach the Ten Commandments, and we preach it as the new law. Statisticians tell us that 97% of Americans say that the Ten Commandments are important, but only 5% can name three of the commandments. They are moral principles that offer the very best hope for America and for us and for the world. God spoke these words. They are important. Jesus spoke these words. They are important. And to be able to understand the old law will give us the ability to be able to understand the new. There's no salvation in the Ten Commandments. Zero salvation in the Ten Commandments. Nobody's saved by keeping them. In fact, it's impossible to keep these laws. It was impossible for the ancient Jews to keep it. Not a one of them were able to keep these laws. That's why Jesus had to come from the throne of heaven to live justifiably and to be able to sanctify this law, because man is unable to do it. It was unable to then, and they are unable to live this law today. But the New Testament in the writing tells us that if we understand the old laws, that we understand that we are sinners and we understand just where we stand, and we know that we are totally lost, and one is totally lost and they need Christ, and Christ is the only one that can offer the salvation. So the Ten Commandments are taught because they are important to salvation, because it gives us a reality. The Ten Commandments are principles. I'm going to say that again. The Ten Commandments are principles. This is the key word here that will change us and can change the world. And we really ought to squeeze everything we can out of the wisdom that God gave the ancient Israelites that was brought forth into the New Testament of Christ. There is more truth and more hope found in these few little verses in the 20th chapter of Exodus than you will find in the multi-millions of volumes of law and ordinances and decrees that exist in Washington, D.C. How does Washington, D.C. solve a problem? Well, if you're going to educate people, Washington tells us we must throw money at the problem. We must put more money in it. Kids must take more to educate them. You got to pay your teachers. Throw money at it. But let me tell you what you get when you throw money and improve the education of a sinner. A sinner that is educated without changing the heart of that sinner just becomes a smarter sinner. Now let's say that you educate a thief without changing the heart of that thief. All that you have created is something, one that goes from a petty thief to someone that does major thievery. Therefore, the Ten Commandments tell us that we need to get back to the words, "Thus saith the Lord." Ronald Reagan, I think, very succinctly said this when I quote what he said, "If we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under." Now those are words of wisdom. If we ever forget that we are a nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under. And I'll tell you, in my almost 66 years of life, I have seen some unbelievable changes in schools and government and home and the way we approach Christianity in our country. When I first taught school, we had the Ten Commandments posted on the wall, and we began every day with prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. And this was something that we did without fail. But we don't do that anymore. Now in our schools, the Ten Commandments have been pulled down, and we're teaching very, very young elementary students about sex education, and in some cases even helping them even more than education. The Boy Scouts several years ago decided that they did not want an avowed homosexual as their den leader. And the government stepped in and said, "You can't stop it. This is a recipe for disaster." The spotted owl is a bird that is protected from birth to death by some very serious and some very strenuous laws. And you better not mess with a spotted owl. They tell me they taste like chicken, but you better not find out, because these are a protected bird. But where is the protection for babies? On January the 22nd of 1973, Roe versus Wade was decided by the Supreme Court. 7 out of 9 members of the Supreme Court, with their fancy dignified robes, stood up and said, in our mind, in our decision, abortion should be legally allowed in the United States of America, and murder, killing, is no longer a guilt in this country. Abortion is allowed. January the 22nd of 1973 through the year 2015, statisticians tell us that 56,405,766 babies have been aborted. Now, when you take the most precious creation that God ever gave us and you murder that baby before he ever enters into life, we got a problem. We got a serious problem, and we will answer for our country for that number right there. It's time we get back to the basics. It's time we begin to realize that we do not have authority to go against God's law. And God said, thou shalt not kill. When a president, a standing president, says, you know, my sexual immorality really depends on the definition of what is, when he lies to his spouse and commits sexual immoralities in the White House, why should we be amazed and surprised when he lies to us, or his wife lies to us, and he starts trampling on our constitutional rights? It's time we get back to the basics of what we're truly being taught in the Ten Commandments. Let's fantasize here just a minute, and this is pure total fantasy. The Jews could not obey the Ten Commandments, and neither can we. But let's just fantasize for a minute what would happen if all Americans today decided to live by the Ten Commandments. What would this do to our country? Now, we know it has no power to save, so nobody's going to be saved. Nobody's going to get to heaven by following the Ten Commandments. But what if everyone in our country lived according to the moral principles which are defined in the Ten Commandments? For starters, most of our national problems would be a thing as a past, because the crime rate would plummet. Violence and abortion would cease. Government corruption would be over. Prisons would be emptied. Teen pregnancy, divorce, hate, racism, terrorism, all of these things that are against what the Ten Commandments teach would be obliterated. You would be able to walk down any street in any city in our country with total and complete happiness, comfort, confidence, no fear of anything. And the lock manufacturers would have no business at all. They would be put completely out of business if people in our fantasy world would just follow the commandments and the teachings of the Ten Commandments. But it's fantasy, because the reality is that America has kicked God out of school. America has kicked God out of government. The many homes in America have had God taken away from them. And in this vacuum that is left when God is kicked out, in this vacuum comes this human secular humanism, and we've had a huge moral slide in our country that just started taking place about a half century ago. In church, attendance and morality in our country have dropped dramatically. I brought a lesson to you last year about a Swiss study that was conducted at the behest of the Church of England. And the Church of England wanted to know why, since 2000, they had lost so many members. Their men and their children had quit coming to church. And the study showed that when feminists took over the church, when feminists began doing the teaching, when the masculine sense had been taken out of the church, when we got away from God's practice of men running the church, when we feminized the church, people turned their back on it, and they were able to prove in this study that when men don't go to church, their kids don't go to church, and the church attendance begins to decline. But on the other side of the coin, let's look at the Jerry Springer show and the shows such as Jerry Springer that are on television. His ratings and his things have skyrocketed since the Ten Commandments have been taken out of existence. In fact, they tell us that one-third of the population of America today is just exactly like the guests that are on the Jerry Springer show. One-third, the other one-third of the guests, enjoy it and like to watch this perversion that goes on in the Jerry Springer show and shows like it. And the other third of us just hide back in the back in the dark in our little corners and keep our mouths shut. In 1980, the Supreme Court, in a case that's referred to as Stone versus Graham, it started in Kentucky, and Kentucky wanted to remove all of the Ten Commandments out of the schools. It went to the Supreme Court, and it was finally decided in 1980 by a 5-4 decision. And in 1980, the Supreme Court said that the Ten Commandments must be pulled out of our schools. They were prohibiting the Ten Commandments. And I want to read to you an exact quote from the majority of the Supreme Court that made this decision, a justice by the name of Walter Brennan. Justice Walter Brennan, speaking for the majority of the Supreme Court, said, "If the posted copies of the Ten Commandments are to have any effect at all, it will be to induce the school children to read, meditate upon, perhaps to venerate, and to obey the commandments." Now, what did Judge Brennan say? Because he's absolutely right. If we allow the Ten Commandments to be posted in our schools, our kids will read these Ten Commandments. They will understand these Ten Commandments. They will obey these Ten Commandments. And we will not have the stealing and the immorality and the taking the Lord's name in vain and adultery and murder and all of these many things that the Ten Commandments speak against. If we allow these to remain in our classrooms, these kids are going to follow what it says. Therefore, we must, as a government, take them down. And the other hand of that, if they don't read it, then they don't follow it, and they don't understand it, and they don't know it. And I believe that the problems that we're encountering in our world today are very, very well in line with exactly what Justice Brennan said. Getting back to the principles of the Ten Commandments is the only hope that we have for the church and for the world. And even churches today that teach it are becoming more irrelevant and more powerless and ineffective. If God's people would get back to living by the Ten Commandments, when I say God's people, I'm talking about all people with any form of Christianity. And we're not talking about it as a saving power, but we're talking about it as the principles of morality. And if every Christ-serving person in the country would go back to the Ten Commandments and begin to follow it, then there would be a revival. We churches could once more become as a lighthouse, as showing the people. If Christians decided to obey the command to honor and father and mother, then the rebellion that we're seeing from our children would end. If ever Christian-natured or Christian-following person would decide to honor the first day of the week and gather on the first day of the week and learn of God's will and His laws and take time to consider, then we would have godly people instead of people that are not godly. If every Christian would decide to obey the command not to steal, then he would stop stealing from God and from his neighbor. If every Christian-minded person decided to have no idols, put no gods before Christ, before God, and decided to do nothing that would put him anything in a position above God, then we would all be happier, healthier, and wealthier. Because the commandments that God gave to the children of Israel, the principles and the commandments, are a blueprint for a beautiful life. Some things you do, some things you do not do. They are rules and they are regulations, and the thou shalt nots are just as important as the thous. And the law and the thou shalt nots all go together, because true love sometimes needs to follow the restraints that the commandments place. And when God says, thou shalt not, he doesn't say it as someone is trying to take life away from us, but he's saying it because he realizes that it will make life happier and better and less destructive and will take the misery out. The commandments that God gave to the children of Israel that have been brought forth into New Testament scriptures are gifts from God. Gifts first to the Israelites and gifts to us through Jesus. It allows us a compass for direction and give us our bearings. It is said that in World War II, when the American pilots would take off from the air bases in Great Britain and would fly over to bomb Germany, that when they came back, that bad weather was always over England. It was always foggy. It was always cloudy. And the bombers and the pilots would not be able to find their way back to the bases. But when they got over England, it said that through the breaks and the fog and the clouds, they would be able to see these church spires and these church steeples that dotted the countryside of Great Britain. And they began to learn and to establish the spirals in order that they would see them, and they would follow these church steeples to take them back to their bases. So even though the sky was gray and there was a fog in the land, these steeples, these churches, gave direction to the pilots. Our world itself today is a moral fog. The spiritual weather is terrible, and we need some signposts and some guideposts from God to show us the way that we're supposed to go. Ten Commandments also a thermometer for love, because Jesus said, if a man loves me, he'll keep my words. But you got to know what the words are before you're able to command the words of Jesus. Ten Commandments offer a mirror for reality. One man said it in this way, and I think it's very appropriate. He said there must be shedding of blood for sin, and we know that's what Jesus did when he died upon the cross. He justified the old law, and he wrote his new law. But he said, you have a mirror in your bathroom, and when you look in that mirror, you see a picture of the law, because you see your filth and your dirt. You see you as you really are. But he said, underneath that mirror is a basin. You don't wash yourself in the mirror. It only tells you what you are. You wash yourself in the basin. In the words of one of our favorite invitation songs, there's a fountain filled with blood, drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunge beneath that flood, lose all their guilty stains. The mirror tells us what we are, and the Bible tells us that's what the old law was. But the basin is where we clean ourselves and refresh ourselves. So, in conclusion, we're all sinners, and we've all broken the laws of God. The ancient Jews could not keep the Ten Commandments, and we cannot keep them as well. That's why Jesus came down from the throne of heaven down to earth to fully complete and to live perfectly this old law, to justify it, and with his blood he was able to sanctify it, and he was able to destroy it. He was able to fulfill it. He was able to abolish it. He fulfilled this old law and replaced it with a more perfect law, his law. The old law that contained the Ten Commandments belonged to the children of Moses. They do not apply to us today, and they have zero saving power. It's a law that belonged to people 2,000 years ago. It does not apply to us. It has been completed, fulfilled, and abolished. But the principles of the old law, the principles of the Ten Commandments, are just as important and just as necessary today as the day that God gave them to Moses. And all nine commandments were brought forth into the New Testament, and one was brought forth as being amended. Here's what I want you to remember. The Ten Commandments are the foundation that Christianity was built upon. And the primary obligation that we have today is the same obligation that those children of Israel had back then. And the obligation, according to Jesus Christ, is that we love God, we obey God, and the secondary obligation is to love our neighbors as ourselves. And upon these two commandments that are the greatest of all commandments, our Christianity is built. The principles of the Ten Commandments are very much alive today. And that obligation and that responsibility and that commandment has not changed for man, and it never will. The Ten Commandments are the foundation of the law of Jesus Christ. And the law of Jesus Christ is to love God first and to love neighbor as self. And that's all they got. Have a song of invitation now. If we can help anyone in any way, we ask you to come forward as we sing.